Welcome to Just Join Jerry. Today we have our co-host, but most importantly is our interviewee, the one, the only, Adrian Perez.
Hello, how are you guys?
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Look into that camera there and let the world know who you are, where you come from, and what you do. And
all right. Hi. My name is Adrian Perez. I've been in the beauty industry for 22 years. I started as a makeup artist. I started my career back in Stockton, California. And after doing makeup there for a year, I moved to San Francisco and had the opportunity to work in luxury retail with Saks Fifth Avenue. And I worked at Saks for about 8 years. So that really gave me a lot of exposure because it's a flagship store, meaning that a lot of production, a lot of sales come from that store, a flagship store considering retail. So I got an opportunity to meet a lot of network with a lot of people. So the good thing about being in that platform is that I got to meet the people that would eventually hire me in my career. So was there for about a good 8 years, then lived in San Francisco for a good 10 years. I had the opportunity to come to LA and picked up contracts with Warner Brothers. Now I'm with Netflix, Disney Studios. So I do a lot of freelance work. I do a lot of hair and makeup. So I don't just do I did makeup then in San Francisco, but now I do hair and makeup.
Okay.
So now I own my hair salon here in Woodland Hills, California.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah. So that's a little bit about me.
Big time.
Yeah. And well, here's my question, okay? So as you're going through this, I'm seeing here's a question. So I know you, so they don't know you. How long have you been an openly gay dude?
I've been openly gay since I was 13.
Since you were, okay. So that's my train of thought. Like, yeah. Did you go into the industry straight and then all of a sudden?
No, I was very open in high school. Thank God I was on the side of all the cholas. So the cholas used to have my back because I used to get bullied a lot. So I was, and that's because one of my brothers was a little bit involved in that. So they all kind of protected me. So I dealt with bullying, but I was always protected because I come from Stockton. Stockton is it was a town very gang related.
Yeah.
A lot of that. So, but although I was very opened, I was very protected.
Cool.
So I've been very comfortable always presenting myself for who I am.
Okay. So age of 13. From 13 to, you said you got hired up there in
San Francisco. So I first started working at a Macy's at the benefit counter. I was 17, from 17 to 18. And at 18 years old, I was I started going to San Francisco because San Francisco was a thing then. You know, I mean, you got to go to the city, and everybody talked about, oh, you got to go to the city. And I was like, what is the city about? You know, people are like, oh, you know, you can be whoever you want to be. It's totally open. I was like, well, what is this? And I come from a, you know, Latin family, Catholic, very, very conservative. So I was also kind of in the search of, I wanted to know who I was, you know. And I also, not only that, I also, as an artist, you know, I wanted to understand which way I wanted to really apply myself as, you know, where did I want to apply my art, or do I want to do something else? So when I started going to San Francisco and just kind of exploring the city, I fell in love with it. I was like, I want to come here. And I remember walking through Union Square and I just saw these beautiful boutique stores and luxury stores. And I was like, oh, man. I want to be part of this. And I remember walking into Saks Fifth Avenue and asking for the manager. And I was like, only like 18 and a half. And I was like, oh, can I speak to your manager? I'm looking for a job. And everybody looked at me up and down like, who is this kid?
Yeah. You know?
And it was a moment where I really saw where when I made a decision, I was not going to give up. So she said, no, kid, you don't have enough experience. I did speak to the manager. She said, you don't have enough experience. Do you know where you're at? You're at Saks Fifth Avenue. Everybody wants to work here. You make really good money. I was like, okay, well, I want to work.
That's why I want to be here,
right?
Bitch.
Exactly. That's like that's why I want to be here, you know. So, and she said, no, you don't have enough experience. Go back and get more experience. So I think in a year I stopped about 8 times to visit her, and she kept on turning me down. And I said, no, I want to work for you.
Persistent.
Yes, exactly. And finally, she said, okay, I'm gonna have you interview with the vendor. And then if you do well in sales, then I'll bring you on permanent to the store. So I interview with the vendor, and I turned down the position. And she was very upset. She goes, why'd you turn it down? And I said, because I don't want to work for them. I want to work for you. So however long it takes me to convince you that I want to work for you, then I'm going to continue doing that. I'm going to continue showing up to your door. And I don't remember where I got the balls or where I got that confidence to tell her that.
Yeah.
Because she kept on turning me down. And literally after that, 2 months later, I get a phone call. And she goes, left the voicemail. Hey, you know, this is so-and-so from Saks Fifth Avenue. You persistent little booger. I have a job for you. So then by then I was already almost 19. And moved to San Francisco, and I was, you know, at the time, man, 22 years ago, and making the money that I was making then, it was big. You know what I mean? I thought I had it made, but then you go into the city where a town boy going into the city who is sheltered and very, you know, you go wild, and I went wild.
I was gonna say, it doesn't matter how much you make, it matters how much you have at the end of the week.
Exactly. So I think that was a good point for me to really to explore my creativity, to explore the industry that I was really getting into, which was makeup. And just also learning about, you know, learning and being in a professional setting,
yeah,
being around people who are, you know, who are very established, old money, especially in San Francisco, San Francisco, Union Square, Saks Fifth Avenue. You have old money. You have people from Sausalito. You have people from, you know, from around the Bay that, you know, they're very established. And
They're established. Their great great grandfathers are established.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's this little town boy, Latino, who I didn't grow up around that. So I needed to almost kind of acclimate to my environment, like how to have conversation with these people. So I really felt that was the moment where my career was really like
grooming at
exactly.
That point.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you say that, because I actually have a friend who just recently got fired, owns his own business. I don't want to give too much details out because I haven't asked for permission to talk about it, but he literally got fired because he's so used to not being held accountable to anyone, because in his business, I can make, bend the rules, do whatever I want. But then he went and he was kind of helping somebody else in their business and didn't understand the amount of politics that go into climbing the ladder. And I think that when you're talking about how you had to get acclimated, learning who you can talk to, when you can talk to, who you can, it's almost like who you allow to let you disrespect you. And like, it's a part of policies,
right? Of course.
Like how dare you, you know, defend your honor and your value to this person? Do you know who they are? And you're just like, no, I actually don't. Like, so there's so much that goes into grooming yourself to be put into a position where you can then go work for Warner Brothers,
right?
And then go. You cannot just be. There's a level of street smart you have to have, and there's like a hybrid. Almost of a person who you need to adapt yourself to be when you're gonna go work in those. Likewise with you.
A to Z.
Right. With the homeboy that the whole incident that you had.
Oh my God.
Yeah, where he just didn't understand.
Yeah.
He had an incident where one of his employees misrepresented his company.
Right.
And for just simple things where it's just like, why would you ever do something like that in front of a client?
Mm-hmm.
And carry sense. Yourself. It's common sense. But a lot of people end up getting fired too quick. And then you had the balls to stare at it in the face and say, you know what? I'm gonna learn this. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm gonna be this person because this is who I want to be, because that's the only way I can afford to be a wild guy in San Francisco.
It's also the only way you can become successful is when you have the passion behind it to be like, there's nothing you're gonna say that's gonna stop me from getting to where I want to be.
Right, but I think there's something that you just said that's very important that I want to touch that I can relate with your friend. Because there was jobs where I was terminated. I was terminated because I was such a go-getter. I didn't understand the politics. I said, if I'm performing for you, and this is an issue, why is this not being addressed? Because when you work in the corporate world and you have someone else who's producing bigger than you, they go over that. They take that person. You know what I mean? They really gravitate towards that person, and they're going to defend that person. So. When being the entrepreneur that I am now, I look back at my experiences, right? I look back where I wanted to speak my mind. I was always wild. You know, I was always wanted to, even since I was a little boy, I was, you know, when I was going to Catholic school in Mexico, I never wore my uniform and I was always getting in trouble. I was always testing the boundaries, right?
Yes.
And I realized that as I got older, it was something that I also wanted to do, but it's not because I was trying to see what I can get away with. I wanted more. I wanted more even in every job, in every position that I was, I wanted growth. And I understood that you go, when you're in even at Saks, you know, and you don't fit a certain stereotypical, you know, look or whatever.
You're not in the square box that they painted you
exactly.
to be in.
You are held back. You were held back.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the things that, although, yes, it molded me, like, to learn to how to be around affluent people and people of that caliber, I learned so much about the corporate that I know that if I wanted to be successful and I wanted to do something for me, I needed to do it on my own. But I take that as all of that was polishing me. All of that... Because now that I own my business, I look back at all that and I was like, that makes sense. That makes sense why Adrian was always getting in trouble, because there's always standards, policies that when you are building a company or you're building a brand, you have to stick with.
Yes.
But now, when I'm hiring people, I'm really quick to identify the Adrian Perez's, you know what I mean? That, because I remember who I was.
Yes.
I remember how I used to be. And
it gives you a little more patience with some people than others.
Absolutely.
I think that at least with me, I have plenty of people who've worked for me who I should have fired first month. You know, and they stuck with me for like 2-3 years. Yeah. And every time I saw them, it's almost like when I see my kid do a mueca that I do, you know, or do like have a saying that I say. And it's just like, man, I really should be upset with you right now. You know, we all, you know, we have kids right here. I don't know.
No.
No.
In the future.
Josh has kids. And there's certain things that they do. Where if it was any other kid in the world, it would blow your top. But because they did it and they kind of look like you, and they kind of act like you, you can't help but to start laughing, and you cover your face a little bit and you're just like, I don't like that you did that. But you're like laughing under, right?
Every day.
So with a lot of people who work under us, when we start seeing the young Adrian, and the young Jerry, and the young Anders, pop up, I think that's where it starts. So, but let's take it now from that point to at this, because right now you're just doing makeup.
No, and hair.
Okay, so at that point you're doing makeup and hair.
No, at that point I'm only doing makeup.
Okay.
Oh. I'm only doing makeup.
How did it go from makeup to hair? Was that in LA or was that over there?
That was over in San Francisco. So what, you know,
opportunity present?
Well, that's a good question, because you know, I think that I've always been the person when I wanted more from jobs, and obviously walls were placed in front of me. It wasn't that I wanted more from jobs. I wanted more from myself. So I was my biggest challenge. I was my biggest competitor. And that was, I remember working in cosmetics and doing makeup, and I said, hey, I love the way that a woman gets up from a chair and she feels confident. She feels beautiful, and she's ready to, you know, to take on her day or take on the night. So I remember thinking, man, if makeup is doing this, that's going to be removed at late at night or the next morning, depending on who the client is. Hey. You know, so I said, if I can create a longer extension of that, why not? And I remember, I thought, you know what, beauty school, doing hair. But, you know, a little bit before going to this, before I started doing makeup, I was going to do beauty school.
Okay.
But I was doing beauty school through this ROP program back in high school. But I was a rascal, man. I was a troublemaker. I got kicked out twice from beauty school.
Mm.
So then I went into makeup. And then when I was 10 years into doing makeup, I went back to beauty school. So it really took me the third time to really finish.
Third time's a charm.
And that's one thing that I was, you know, I've been sitting on right now, where it's just like, sometimes we only see ourselves as our best motivator. I'm my best motivator. Yeah. We're also our biggest obstacle.
Oh, absolutely.
And the more creative you are and the more norms you typically try to break, like I do stuff that I really shouldn't do, and it's just like to prove to me that I can.
Yeah.
And so, but I'll take some steps back in my career, because I'm constantly just so stubborn about I'm going to do it my way and I'm going to do this and I want it. And then months later, it's like, all righty, I did it the wrong way. Let me tweak this and let me tweak that. So as you're doing this, do you feel that if you would have just conformed, if you would have just did it their way, that you would have hit, even though it's not your type of success, but you would have hit a level of success faster doing it the way that they told you to stay in the square?
You know, that's a very good question. If I look back of what I used to think success was at the time, I think so. I think so. I think that at that time when I was working there, I wanted to be a national makeup artist. I wanted to be an international, where I would be traveling around and representing the company in different cities in the U.S. or out of the country. So that was my level of success, my idea of success.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was trying to reach those positions, there was always someone else selling more than me. It wasn't that someone else was doing better makeup than me. It was that they were selling.
Yeah, it was like their reward from the company.
Right. So they were bringing more production in. They were bringing in more numbers. So they looked at you as a number.
Mm-hmm.
How much is Adrian bringing, or how much is so-and-so bringing? Well, so-and-so's bringing more, so let's give him that position.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's a bonus that comes attached.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So I think that if I would have followed their where they were trying to put me, I would have reached the success that, but I wanted it. I wanted it now. I was always been so eager, and I think I learned as a businessman, I need to learn how to back up a little bit, because I'm always that forward-forwarding where I'm like, oh, let's do it. Boom. I'm planning. Boom, boom, boom. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, it didn't work out. And
yeah,
then it goes at the very expensive lesson.
You, the story of my last 3 months, right? For me, it's, I can sit here with you and we can come up with a whole business. People don't get what I'm talking about. You get what I'm talking. Yeah. We can come up with a whole business from A to Z if you stay here for 10 hours and we talk this shit through.
Absolutely.
Give me a pen and a paper and we'll come up with the brand, the theme, the marketing strategies, the customer base, the customer market that we're going to hit, how we're going to hit. And I get exactly what you're saying. And then you start playing certain things out and you're just like, you skip the step.
Yeah.
And it's a very expensive step to go back. And you're just like, oh, okay. But you're not afraid to launch it.
No,
and then the creative side in you, you know what I mean? It's like, go. Yeah. And then the discipline side of you just gets run over by the creative.
Yeah.
Right? So you're doing this, you know, before we started recording, we were talking about how you were even having to take some humiliation at some points you got rejected from the drag job.
Yeah, so what happened after I got my cosmetology license, so I left Saks Fifth and I left the cosmetic industry for a while and I went back to beauty school. And right after I finished my cosmetology, got my license, I moved to LA. So when I moved to LA, I already had a contract with Warner Brothers, independent contractor. And I was like, all right, let's do this. Let's take a leap of faith. It was between LA or New York. I was more appealed to go to New York, but I didn't know nobody. So I got scared. Got in the way and fear. And I ended up moving to LA because I know that in LA, I already had met people with publicists with Warner Brothers, and I had worked with some other hairstylists that were working with celebrity clientele. So I moved to LA, and you know, when I moved to LA, it's fake until you make it. I've always been fake until you make it. Let's go, let's hustle. And I was very new at hair, but I had a lot of experience in makeup. And I remember picking up this job where this gentleman hired me to do drag makeup. And I thought, well, I've been a makeup artist for 10 years. I know how to do drag makeup. But I didn't realize that. I did not know how to do it because it is a different form of makeup. It is it's very theatrical. It's very heavy. And when I got hired to the job, he kicked me out. He said, I'm not paying your rate. This is ridiculous. You're not executing what you're supposed to do.
Wow. You're trying to make him cute, right, but not what he wanted.
Right, because I was doing what in the LGBT community, everybody calls it fish makeup, where you're making the person look like a female. But drag makeup is different. Drag makeup is heavy, heavy theatrical. It needs to be visible from like almost a block away. In dim light.
That's almost like the opposite, where you need to show the proudness of what you're of the message you're trying to send, as opposed to the other ones where it's like, no, I'm trying to dial it down to possibly catch somebody.
Right, exactly. Okay. Exactly. So my makeup that I was doing on the gentleman was more what they use for terms as fish makeup. Most transgender women will wear that type of makeup. So he fired me. He said, get out of here. You're not executing. And I remember I felt really bad because here I was. I was new to LA and I was trying to promote my services. But that's when I saw an opportunity. I said, wait, you don't know it all in the makeup, Adrian. You've been in it for 10 years. You need to learn this. You need to execute this better. You need to understand it. So then I started becoming a makeup drag queen. So I started doing drag, but I didn't do drag because I was trying to escape into this new character, to this other persona. I was doing drag to learn my creativity
firsthand.
Be more creative. And I knew that when you do drag, you go into this character, right? And I remember that a couple of colleagues were like, hey, you're not going into character. But I was already in character. I was always very, very artistic. I was always very forward. I was always very confident. So I didn't have to go into this character to be someone else. Doing drag became more about learning how to work with makeup, doing drag makeup. Mm-hmm. But in the process, I learned a lot about myself as an artist, and that was how, you know, I have to consistency, because with drag makeup, you can't be so creative. You can be creative, but your technique has to be almost in steps, and what did I mean by that? It has to be technical. Just the way you applied it the first time, you got to apply it the second time. Because when you start trying to get too creative, ooh.
Yeah, I think it's similar to in barbering. When you're a barber to somebody who's shooting a series, this is one thing I learned, where it's you have to understand, because sometimes they might shoot like early in the season, the person needs to look young. Mm-hmm. Later in the season, they might look older, but then they have to go redo So the barber has to remember the exact haircut mm-hmm. because you're reshooting something from almost a year yeah. ago, and you have to make it look identical because they're going to fit that shot in there.
Yeah.
So it's all about technique at that point.
Yeah, I think that one of the things you're saying is continuity is what they call it in production. But I think that's also very applies to drag makeup. What steps did you take to apply that? And you have to repeat that over and over because in drag, you create your look. You create that certain look that you want to be known
for. It's their brand.
Basically. It's their brand. So it's all that has to. And when I was exploring and I was learning, oh man, I look like a hot mess some of the times. You know,
it was something different every time.
There was the shimmer powder way too all over. Sometimes I walked around looking like the Tint Man. It was just like, but it was
people were popping out WD-40.
But it was my learning curve.
And that's why you were doing it.
Exactly. I was doing it for that because I needed to understand texture when it came to drag makeup. I needed to understand what would last longer, what would stay on all night, what would go under really hot lights, you know what I mean?
What made you uncomfortable in certain moments? Like, oh, I'm sweating heavy. This isn't the one. I get what you're talking about.
So thanks to that, the way that gentleman treated me and kicked me out of his house because I wasn't doing what he had hired me for, that was a big turning point for me. Like, yes, you know, at the time, you know, I can think, oh, that's, you know, messed up. But at this time, I was like, I'm thankful that that happened. I'm thankful that I got kicked out of there and he didn't pay me for my services because I wouldn't have explored the way that I have.
Mm-hmm. That's key. A lot of people take those L's and just like, oh, all right, I don't have it. Like, and they move on.
Right.
You looked at it like, no. I need to go back. I need to figure this out.
And the self-awareness to be okay with not being the guy. After 10 years, you could have easily had your feelings like, excuse me, do you know who the
LA.
Do you know who the hell I am? Exactly. Like, I've been, it's kind of like when these younger barbers come up to me now and they're, you know, they're talking about their techniques and things, and I'm just like, I've been doing this for 50. My initial instinct is, kid, I've been doing this since you were, what year were you born? 2003. I'm just like, I've been cutting hair since 2006.
Yeah.
And they're just like, you know, but then I'm just like, but teach me how to do it though.
Yeah.
Like, how do you do it? How do you do that? How do you do this? So it's a good thing, a learning lesson for the people watching, that you need to get out of your own fucking way. You need to get out of your own feelings. You need to stop being a little hoe about certain things because that pain is pushing you to your purpose. Absolutely. If you just get out of your own way. Now, okay, so you make it from that part. You're over here. You're starting to do the hair.
Mm-hmm.
You have a major influence in the porn industry.
Yes.
Okay. How do you get... Because you're super connected when it comes to that. Okay.
okay.
So some of...
I didn't know this bit, but all right.
So, yeah. No, but some of our viewers' probably favorite actresses get their hair done by you.
Yeah.
And
so I'll go into it. I think that I've always been very opened. What does that mean? I've always been opened, meaning that I treat everybody equally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I really learned that going back to Saks Fifth Avenue, because you had old money walking in there that never looked like they had money, you know. You walked in there that someone super polished and probably was concerned about prices, okay? So when I learned that back, when I look back, I never wanted to judge anybody for what they did for work, nor what they look like, okay? So, and hey, I love porn. You know what I mean? I love porn. I love watching porn, you know?
So freedom of expression,
exactly.
Huh?
It's a very successful industry.
Right. So for me, when I had the opportunity to meet a very, very successful makeup artist who was known through every studio, we became really, really good buddies.
Networking. There you go. Importance of networking.
Exactly. I met her, and then she is known by every producer in L.A., and she is, I mean, a woman that is just has so much light, so much positivity, and just a beautiful human being. We met and we vibed. She, you know, I think our energy kind of matched, and she started referring me about a bunch of the girls. And I think that she also saw that I was not a person that judged them or made them feel uncomfortable. I always treat everybody equally. You know what I mean?
If anything, you were an expert in because of the lifestyle that you've lived, you're an expert at knowing how to hype them up,
exactly.
How to be in their shoes.
Exactly.
Drag for you, I'm sure, wasn't natural.
No, it was
to get on stage or to be seen. No. So you had to break personal barriers because you understood where your vision and where what you were trying to attain. So you kind of can relate with them.
Absolutely.
For the exact same purpose. Absolutely. They might do it differently in their art form, but for me, I think that how is it that you go from working on Monday, hypothetical here, mm-hmm. right? But working on Monday on a porn set, working on Tuesday at Good Day America. Yeah. Like, so
treat everyone the same.
Right.
No, you treat everybody the same.
Exactly.
Has anyone ever like let you go because they do a little research on you and say, well, you know what, you're
a very good. That's a very good question. So before, I think the studio that has been the most conservative has been The News. And I know when they were trying to bring me on board to the producers and they were introducing my name, they asked me, I was asked by the person, can you take all your porn girls down from your Instagram?
Whoa. Mm.
Can you clean it up? Mm. And I said, no.
Yeah.
I said, no. I said, they're models. They are showing my
empowered women.
Exactly. They are showing my work. So no, I'm not going to take them down. Well, it's going to be more difficult because, you know, the news is more, it's more conservative. And I think that maybe you should consider, you know, taking them down or clean it up. And I said, no, I'm not taking them down. And she goes, okay, fine. So I didn't take them down because, first of all, it's my work.
Mm.
Second, everybody's equal to me.
Taking them down would have almost been in your eyes demeaning them.
Exactly.
Like you're so...
Well, 100%. Because it's what they were saying to begin with. Like, oh, they shouldn't be up there. Take them down because we can't be represented the same.
Yeah, because of their lifestyle or whatever choices. But then the other part that they're not seeing is, yeah, they're going to give you some money for doing the news, the anchors and things like that. What about the girls that are... also coming to you that are like, oh, you did my friend's hair.
Mm-hmm.
You did. And so they reach out and now it's almost a point of reference. If so-and-so did so-and-so's hair, hey girl, how did he treat you? How did he act with you? You know what I mean? So it is also what they're saying is you need to start building outside of your brand.
Mm-hmm.
And we also need to cut off a lot of your potential future
to me, that's
business.
Wild because like you could play the same card, be like, hey, I could do business with you, but can you not have this person on?
Right.
Or you know what I mean? It's like, what the hell?
Or what if you start picking and choosing whose hair you have because you don't, the politics aren't aligned.
Exactly.
It just shouldn't be, especially in an art form, because that's, you are an art form, right? Yeah. Like not just your persona and the way you sell yourself, but your actual style of makeup, of hair, it becomes an art form. So I just thought that it was interesting to bring that up, that you can switch, and that's something that a lot of the people who are watching who might be in the beauty industry are also going to need to learn, because you don't stop being yourself, but at the same time, you learn to mold yourself in certain atmospheres.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Just because you're ratchet with your friends on Friday doesn't mean you're going to show up to somebody's home and be ratchet at their home, you know, without learning the...
One of the things that I know it was presented by my... So I have celebrity clientele. I have a huge celebrity clientele. I also have a huge porn celebrity clientele. I also have the everyday woman and the everyday man.
Mm.
There was a situation where one of my everyday day clients said, you know, you posted a photo of a little girl's haircut, and on your Instagram, she's almost close to one of your porn girls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I feel about that. I said, tell me how you feel about that. Really tell me how you feel. And then she goes,
say it with your chest, you
said. Right. I said, and she's going on. I said, So what's the difference? It's still hair was executed on the young girl. Hair was executed on my my actress. Then she, you know, sometimes people that are want to put some sort of division, you know, sometimes you just need to be heard. So what I like to say, tell me. And when they're talking, they've talked so much that they start listening to themselves where they sound.
You know how ridiculous they sound sometimes.
Exactly. And that's what really kind of.
That's a good method.
Because look.
I'm going to start doing that. Yeah. Go ahead, tell me.
So, and here's the thing. You sell feelings. Mm-hmm. People don't understand. When you're a hairdresser, when you're a barber, when you're a chef, when you're a producer, you're selling feelings.
Absolutely.
What feeling did you transfer? So if I were to take my daughter to get her hair cut by you for her graduation, mm-hmm. her feeling might be princess. Mm-hmm. You might end up doing my wife's hair at the same time. Her feeling might be, oh, I'm bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Two different avenues, absolutely. but you reached two different feelings that made them feel great. Exactly. So at that point, you made the little girl feel like she is Snow White, ready to conquer the world. And you made the porn star feel like she is Snow White, ready to conquer the porn world, or some sort of, you get what I mean?
I just don't understand why people have, like, why does it matter?
Well, you know, I think what it is it doesn't necessarily matter, but it matters to those people who are afraid or let fear come without really understanding that it's still a job. It's still a job for them. Hmm. You know what I mean? Yes, they look at it and they put, I think, like, you know, however they were raised, religious background into effect. But the reality is, it's work. It is work. And I've talked to so many of them and I work with so many of them. It's their job. And they're completely different outside of the set. They are just regular people, regular, you know.
Yeah, of course.
But and here's the thing. So for me, like what I would tell somebody like that, because I personally don't care.
Yeah.
Right. I would tell them, you're okay with wearing clothes made by 3, 4, 5-year-olds in a sweatshop. And you don't have to, you don't voice your opinion there. But for a woman, grown woman, that says to another grown man, let's make money, you know, having sex on camera, all of a sudden it's like, I need to voice to the world that this is not okay.
But that logic behind all this is stupid, because it'd be like me walking in, be like, oh, he's a barber. Oh, I'm not a barber, so you shouldn't do it. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck? Like, who cares? Go make your money. Do your thing.
But, you know, switching from the end, you taking care of entertainers.
Well, I'd like to know how we got into that.
Into what?
The adult industry.
Oh, it's because of my friend. My friend.
He said the makeup.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah, okay.
She started referring him.
She started referring
Pay attention.
Me.
I thought there was like something he wasn't mentioning or something. No,
yeah, my friend started referring me, and you know, and they just loved the way I would, you know, take care of him. Because here's the thing is that one of the things that I know that there is thousands of hairdressers in this industry. To me, I think what really it's how I make them feel.
Mm. Yep.
It's about the energy. It's the energy that I provide, the service that I provide, you know, how comfortable I make them feel. And everybody that comes through my salon, whether it's a pop star in the lawn culture or
TikTok star
or my cleaning ladies that work as the cleaning ladies, or it doesn't matter. They all has an expectation, and they all get the same treatment. And they all, you know, it's all about making them feel comfortable, making them feel good, and look good. You know what I mean? And about me, when they're in my chair, nothing about me matters. They matter. So it's all about them. It's all about let them talk about what they want to talk about. Let them feel what they want to feel. I hear. I listened. And I, you know, and I execute, you know what I mean? That's how I'm able to provide services from going from point A to point C to every person. And I don't judge for what they do for work, because or what, you know, what they do for a living or how much money they got. That doesn't, you know, I've been very, very grateful and very fortunate that I've been around with very high rollers and also people who don't. I came from, you know, where we also had to work really hard. But I think what really gave me that exposure was Saks, is being around people were with a lot of money,
different backgrounds.
And some people are, you know, high rollers, they're super humble, and you have the ones that are not humble, and you really learned how to work with all different types of people.
And your desire, but for me, it's your desire to want to be better, to demonstrate your art. To you, it's like they're all just a canvas. It's not necessarily that you're a this, you're a that. No. It's you're my canvas.
Exactly.
And let's see how amazing things I can bring out of you.
Right.
And, you know, how me and you met was actually when you were doing the
barber school.
The barber school, right?
Oh, I thought you were going to say the adult industry.
The adult. Quit that years ago. I'm married, bro.
Yeah.
So you reach out to me and you say, I think it was like, oh, dope ass haircut, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I tell you, whenever you want,
yeah,
I'll give you some pointers.
Yeah, you do.
And I was always like, hey, absolutely, if you have a question on that, and then you told me, oh, this machine, I don't know how to, you know, straighten out the blades, things that should have been taught in barber school, but they weren't doing it. And I would see that desire because I went through your page. I remember you reached out to me. And I'm just like, oh, who's this guy? And I go through your page. I'm like, yo, this isn't some rookie that's in second month in Cosmo school. Once I saw the hair and everything. So that to me was just like, dude, he's constantly evolving. He's constantly doing now real estate and all this other things.
No.
But for me, I want to kind of tie this up by saying we deal with entertainers all day long,
absolutely,
but you're an entertainer.
Yeah.
you're on camera right now. Cameras are on, so you know to be on. But when you're an entertainer and I'm an entertainer, so I know the second somebody walks through my doors at any of the shops or anything like that, it's like Jerry, say a dad joke, like Jerry,
the clown show.
Yeah, you have to say things that, even if somebody's sitting three chairs down and he's not my customer, when I'm speaking in this direction, I'm fully aware that I can make that person laugh.
Yeah.
So now I become the entertainer. Yeah. Now I walk in and I'm, you know, how was your family? Hey, so how was the baby shower and what happened? And no way. And what do you do having to be caught up constantly? You're on TikTok dancing salsa and karaoke and doing all this wild
lip singing shirtless,
yeah, you're arriba, you know, you're doing your thing. What does it look like for Adrian Perez to get away from being the entertainer? What do you do to get entertained? Who do you look for to get entertained? For me, it's last night, you know, roast battles. I love roast battles, like you have no idea, you know, stand-up comedians just making fun of each other. And that's the moment where I just stop being Jerry and I'm just a customer. I'm just in the audience. What do you do to get that?
So that's a very good question. So I think I want to go back to 2 years ago. I think that through all my experiences and my trials and tribulations, we've all, as we get older and we get more mature in our career, sometimes we need to find things that give us really solid, that ground us, that make give us a purpose. And I think that two years ago, I began my journey with spirituality, and it became having a closer relationship with God. And so my every day when I'm going through my day, when I'm having questioning some of my decisions, or trying to get energy, I open a dialogue where I'm speaking to my higher power. And a lot of the times when I'm doing that, I'm disconnecting from everyone else. I'm disconnecting, and so I don't have anything else in mind but my meditation, my conversation with my higher power. So when I'm able to do that, I'm able to, let's say if my salon opens at 10, when my clients show up, I'm on.
Yes.
I'm on, and oh, I am. So a lot of the times when on my downtime, I find ways that keep on feeding my spirituality, you know, which is either conversations with my higher power, or I'm journaling, I'm writing things. And a lot of the times, even now more, I've been 66 days without drinking, because I wanted to really focus on, so we call that California sober. So I'm not drinking alcohol, but, you know, I do love cannabis. So, but I knew that alcohol was deteriorating my energy. It was the next day I felt bloated. I felt tired. I didn't want to eat healthy. So when I decided to stop drinking, then, oh man, that's when the TikTok videos became, my creativity is like on fire.
Yes.
You know, that's,
I've been noticing that lately.
Yeah,
you're more and more consistent.
Fire. I'm like, I'm on it. I am starting, like, you know, giving the time to my salon, giving the time to the real estate, giving the time to this, to create content on TikTok, on Instagram. So for me, I think that was the big break point, where understanding that I needed to have a source to really grab energy from, and inspiration and motivation. And that became having a closer relationship with my higher power. And I think that, you know, and don't get me wrong, it was never like this. I was never like that. I was like, I don't want to be part of that. I don't want to listen to that. I don't want, you know, because I grew up Catholic. But in Catholicism, they tell you, well, being gay is a sin and you're not accepted. But and then, you know, with time, I was like, fuck that. No. Love is God, man. And I can still have a relationship with him. And as I've gone older, I've gotten more comfortable in my own skin. And I don't care what people think. And I'm not going to be for everybody. And not everybody's going to like my work. And I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. And not everybody's going to want to come to me. And I'm fine with that. You know, once I understood that.
Once you had to put up with it.
Exactly.
And I get it.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what you're talking about, where for so much time, it's not that it wasn't you. It's just that you were paying your dues almost.
Absolutely.
To get to a place in life where you can now flex and say,
right.
You know, I own my own business. I do this. Right. I do that. And if you don't like me, I can replace you now.
Right.
But when you're building clientele, every customer counts.
Exactly. Every customer counts, but you got to also understand, not everyone is going to be your customer. And I get to choose my customers. They don't get to choose me only. I choose them too. So we also, when we're building, okay, mm-hmm. when we're building, sometimes we let ourselves think like, oh, this customer, no. You choose your customers. When you have been in the industry for so many amount of years, when you have paid your dues, when you have worked your ass off on holidays and worked 12-hour, 14-hour days to make it happen, you know, so your business can stay open and stay afloat, you have to give yourself some credibility.
Yeah.
So just because, you know, just because a client says, I want a haircut, oh, yeah, come on. No. All right. This is what my haircuts are like. This is my booking site. These are my prices. You know, some people are going to say yes, some people are going to say no. Some people have challenged me. Hey, it's my work. You know? And I think when you're building, when you're starting from ground zero, you have to be more flexible.
You have to take on all work almost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I did that. And you know, and even to this day, you know, after the pandemic, we all have to kind of restart again.
Yes.
But I restarted, but I think that I'm now am confident in what I'm able to.
Restarted with the new knowledge.
Exactly.
And that's not a restart. And people who don't understand that they're not there yet.
Right.
You know, that when they see it just like as a full restart and almost like if you were starting from 5 years back. No, we're restarting now with understanding a little bit better on branding, on marketing,
of course, on
valuing your time and strategies. And so
I can't wait to get to where he's at, because it just sounds so peaceful.
Hold on. Yeah.
Since he mentioned that, when's the last time that you had like a full meltdown, freak out, where you had to really rearrange business or rearrange yourself? I'm in the middle of it, so I want to hear yours.
Okay, so that's a very good question. I'm going to be completely transparent. I think it was during the pandemic. I was in the shower, and I started having some suicidal thoughts because I thought I was going to lose my business. And I said, I have a huge overhead. I had two rents. I had everything that I, you know, that was on top of me. And I said, no, I can't think like this. I can't think like this. So I remember I got out of the shower and I contacted my client who owned 50 facilities, 50 hospitals. And I said, I need a job. She goes, what? She goes, I know I can't. Unemployment didn't prove me correctly. I need a job. I can't. I have a huge overhead. I told her, I'll be your housekeeper. I'll be a housekeeper in one of your hospitals. And she goes, no, wait. She goes, let me connect it to my district manager. So during the pandemic, when everybody was scared and everybody was shut down, I went and got a job in the hospital.
Wow.
And doing admissions. And I remember looking in the mirror every day and saying, no, COVID's not for me. And COVID's not going to happen. And I remember always, talking to my higher power, no, I know you have my back. And I was, when everybody was shut down, I was going Monday through Friday for 8 months at a hospital working admissions where patients, more than 25 patients had COVID, employees had COVID, and I did not catch COVID. And all of that was my turning point. That was my turning point where when, as a businessman, as a hustler, as an artist, I will do everything that I can in my power to not go down. And that means that to not let what I have built, just go
evaporate.
Away. Right, exactly.
Oh yeah.
So that was my turning point from ground. And this is during COVID when this was happening, I was also a speakeasy doing hair. I was with only clients that I trusted who had been with me for over 5+ years. And I was working Monday through Friday nights doing hair, weekends doing hair. And when the lockdown was removed, I lost a lot of clients because a lot of the clients were asking me that, first of all, this was a little bit that really hurt my ego a little bit. Once I felt, these were really good clients who I felt comfortable telling them that I was working at a hospital. And they're like, nope, you are at a high risk. So they stopped coming. They stopped coming because I was working at a high risk and they never saw it that I was trying to actually keep my business open. So I think that was my turning point where I said, I need to find time for Adrian.
Yeah.
And it can't just be the business.
They put a mirror to your face and showed you not only that you thought that they had you in a higher priority level, exactly, but they showed you exactly where you are. You're dispensable.
Exactly.
You're replaceable. Yep. Like, oh, no, I could find another Adrian down the street. Exactly. And the second that starts happening, you start moving different as a business owner and an operator. And then those are lessons right there, because how many times in our industry that it's like, I want to go on vacation or I want to go do this with my family, but I can't because I need to be there for my customers. And the second that the role got flipped,
I remember.
So the first month and a half, I actually shut down the shop. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows I really didn't shut down. After that month and a half, I was
put
like
a mirror tint.
Yeah, we put mirror tints and shit like that. Yeah. But everybody knows. So for a month and a half, I just kept telling myself, "What if I open my doors?" Because everybody's like, "I don't go fuck," and come through the back and all that. And I was just like, "What if somebody dies in my?" Because you have to remember the propaganda that was coming out in that first month. People were passing out on the streets in China and da da. So I was just like, "These are my friends. How are you going to open the door for them to come here and die?" And so for that month and a half that I was super serious, I ended up losing 40-50% of my clients to other barbers that were like, well, I'll take you. And also, I didn't want to bring anything back to my kids, to my wife,
right,
in-laws, things like that.
I started shaving my head.
You started, yeah, yeah. So there's
like a razor to my head. I'm like, fuck it, I'll wait.
And I wasn't taking no one. Like, there's people there. You know, there's levels to customers. Let's pretend that there's not, but there's levels to customers, and you have those customers that have been with you forever, and that they're like family. And those were very upset in the beginning, and then afterwards they kind of understood. But then it was like, I understand, but I need my haircut.
Yeah.
So some would leave and come back, but. It just came to show, like, words can only be backed up by action.
Absolutely.
And the time that the rubber meets the road, and I'm like in that case where they're saying, well, then you can't do my hair, or, well, I can find another one of you, that's the moment where you just start saying, after all these years that I've given you everything,
absolutely,
I can't go on Memorial Day vacations because I need to take care of you for Memorial Day. I can't go out on my birthday because I need to be there for
or
you.
Holidays,
Christmas. Yeah. Like, I'd love to go to El Salvador for Christmas.
Yeah, every occasion you can think of where you need to look good and sharp, you guys are there.
Yeah. So I can definitely understand where the ego just kind of crumbles, and you're just like, mother, you want to go from Superman to the Joker real quick.
But, you know, but thankfully for that, it's when I started thinking of, as a businessman, I need to look for opportunities where I can have a passive income. I need to look for opportunities where I'm not so reliant on every client in front of my chair.
Yep.
And that's what's like, you know, so I working at a hospital, doing hair, then I started my real estate. I started my real estate training online. I was busting. I mean, I was busting ass. I was exhausted. But I knew that, you know, I knew that no one was going to come and save me. Like, I'm now married, you know, but he's not in this country. And so everything had to come from my own source. So I needed to be, you know, proactive. Okay, well, if in a case again of a pandemic, when there's I'm relying on my own income, I'm relying on every client behind my chair, what do I need to do? So that's when I said, okay, real estate. Because also too, I have a handful of real successful clients who are super successful here in the LA area, and they had been talking to me about real estate for a while. So I was like, this is it.
They said, you have the charisma, you're out there, you have personality.
Well, you know, and I mean, a lot of them look at, you know, because I can be very creative. So that's another thing that I can be very creative. So sometimes how bold I am on social media, it might not be professional enough for them, but I don't care. You know, like I'm my own person, and that person is that I'm a creative person that loves to hustle and is a business person.
You got this, though. I'll tell you why. You're not in Mississippi, Alabama.
That's true.
You're in LA. You know what I mean? You're in LA, buddy. So you're going to do fine. You're going to be fine. You're going to be great. And if you ever have any bad negative thoughts, hit me up, man. We're going to talk that shit out. But I think that for today, we'll start wrapping up. We're going to have you back soon.
Perfect.
Because I think that there's a lot of other stuff that we can start diving in that a lot of. Now there are people going to be like, oh, I need to know more type of thing. So I just want to, thank you for coming out.
Thanks for
giving
having
your time.
Thank you.
And we're going to save all the good stuff for round two.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Thank you guys for
thank you.
Joining us and being with us and giving us your time. Thanks the co-host, production. Josh, can you say hello?
Yo.
There you go. That's how you're getting from Josh, guys.
I had to unmute myself.
Appreciate you. Peace.
Welcome to the party, Josh.
Thank you.
Welcome.